This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Well, our next guest is making the case for reviving the art and craft of tinkering, and she has loads of inspiring ideas for projects that we can do at home.
So are you? Do you do projects at home, Veronica?
I try to do projects, but they always fail miserably to spectacularly, like the tornado that didn't do anything but settle disappointingly to the bottom of the soda bottle. That's my kind of project.
I'm like a wannabe maker dad. I'll like order these kits for my kids. We did the catapult. We haven't done the trebuchet or the robot doodling kit.
That's advanced stuff.
Well, no, but they're easy kits.
I couldn't even do the making grass grow kit.
Well, we'll hear why we should and maybe how we can get started. We've got Karen Wilkinson. She's director of the Tinkering Studio at the Exploratorium in San Francisco. She's co-author of the new book. It's called The Art of Tinkering. Karen, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. I'm laughing about the making the grass grow.
Yeah, I can watch the grass grow successfully. I'm not great at growing it either. Well, what is tinkering? What do you mean by tinkering?
Well, to me, I mean, tinkering is actually a really old word. It was first used to describe people who kind of were nomadic and repaired tin pots, actually. So the clink, clink, clink. Anyway, I think that's where where it all began. But to me, what tinkering is really all about is a kind of a playful and investigative way of kind of figuring things out, whether it's tornadoes in a bottle or the trebuchets or catapults. Or really all sorts of things, art, science, technology.
Have we gotten too far away from having that kind of curious tinkering ethic, do you think?
Well, I think it's a really good question. I feel like everyone is born a tinkerer. And I think whether it's school or kind of societal pressures, I'm not sure, but I think we've trained it out of ourselves. So we need to get back in touch with it and cultivate it.
Well, is this one of those things, like I'm fairly inept, I don't like doing things I'm not very good at, and then we have this mindset that if we're not good at it, we shouldn't do it. Do you think that's keeping some of us from playing and tinkering in this way?
I absolutely do. The way you described yourself as a wannabe maker dad, it's like, yes, that's fabulous. But for you to turn around and say, like, you know, I try something and it doesn't work, I think it's very natural for people to internalize that and not want to, I don't know if it's just feel inadequate or like it's just not working or it's your fault. But I feel like the tinkerers that I have kind of been around as part of my work at the Exploratorium here in San Francisco, I feel like they all have this one quality, and they're incredibly stubborn and don't see failure as failure. They just see it as more information about what to do next.
Oh, and that's what they always say about, you know, the Thomas Edisons and the other inventors of the world, that failure was just another step toward the eventual success.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, kind of embracing mistakes, really.
Well, that's kind of a tenet of tinkering, and you lay out a few in the book. One is reinvent old technologies. Why would we want to reinvent the wheel or the light bulb or whatever?
Well, I mean, we actually make a joke about this. I mean, we really mean it seriously, but we do talk about, you know, the importance of reinventing the wheel because really, if you look across, well, maker cultures, but also just sort of everything in the book, there aren't really brand new ideas. They're ideas that come up in terms of new materials or technologies, but they're all kind of based on something. And I feel like it's the different perspectives that people bring to things that are so interesting. And I often tell people to find something that excites them the most, whether it was something that resonated with you when you were a teenager or, you know, something that you saw in a store or something last week. If it's of interest, start there. And I think it's really, you know, the older stuff anyway, older things reconsidered are pretty magical to me, actually.
And another tenet you point out is create rather than consume. And that reminds me of my late grandfather who, you know, when his lamp broke, he would take the lamp apart and fix it. And in my generation, or at least speaking for myself, if my lamp breaks, I go out and buy a new lamp. How can we start changing our mentality to fix something or make something new rather than just go out to the store and buy it?
Yeah, I feel like that's changing a bit. I definitely feel like we are a big society of consumers, and I think that there's real pride and empowerment that comes from either repairing or reworking something like an old lamp that's not working, or even starting from scratch and, you know, going to the hardware store and buying a length of wire, a socket, you know, and really putting something together from nothing. Both of those, I feel like, are something we're all capable of, kids and adults, and really should be doing.
We'll get into some practical stuff in a minute, but first I want to know, what do we get out of it? What's in it for us if we make the effort and we do some tinkering of one sort or another?
Well, I feel like there is this, you know, I said it before, this incredible sense of empowerment, but I also feel like when you start tinkering and others see you, whether it's families or friends or coworkers, I feel like the excitement grows, and then you get this incredible appreciation for ideas and things that you're trying, but then you also get people wanting to try things out related to that or just hanging out with you, so it becomes this thing that you're participating in that's much larger than just yourself.
So suppose we want to get started. Are there some good basic tools? What's a good tinkerer toolkit to make sure we have around as we start to take on projects?
Well, every tinkerer is going to give you a different answer to that question, but I would say we all covet tools. And for me, probably my prized possession of the moment is a very fancy soldering iron called a Weller soldering iron. But you don't have to start with fancy tools. I mean, literally, you know, good wire strippers, a really good X-Acto blade, you know, like all of those things from really low-tech to high-tech tools can be really invaluable.
And Karen, you're a professional tinkerer. In your spare time, though, what are you doing? What kind of projects do you have going on now? Or do you leave it at work? You're tired of tinkering by the time you get home.
Well, you're far too kind to call me a professional tinkerer. I love this. But what I'm working on right now at home, it's been raining here in San Francisco, and I have started this habit that has become an obsession, which is collecting plastic bags. I don't know if they've been banned in Wisconsin, but they've been banned in the city here. So they're getting harder and harder to find.
Okay. You're going to have to start ordering them soon.
Yeah. Well, I already am ordering them, actually. I'm looking at a wall here at work, and I have one at home that has rolls and rolls of different colored plastic bags from around the world. But anyway, I'm digressing.
Okay, what do you do with them? Yeah.
I fuse those things together so you can layer them up under an iron. You lay a piece of wax paper on top, and then you can fuse them, stick them all together. And so I've been making picnic blankets and then sewing in a layer of this stuff underneath so they're waterproof.
Okay.
Nothing super fancy.
And you use them as a tablecloth or a picnic blanket or whatever you want.
Yep. In the book, one of the things that's featured is a jacket that I made. I was making clothes out of these for a while. But, right now, you can really, anything you can imagine plastic being a part of, you can turn them into that.
So this makes the case that this does not have to be an expensive hobby. You can use a lot of found materials like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's one of the my favorite things is just the sort of remixing and reconsidering. At the museum recently, we've been doing these toy take-apart workshops, toy dissections. And we literally cut these toys open and pull out the innards and then reimagine and remake them into new things. And one of my favorites that just got created, I think this could torment the 7-year-old, but it was an Elmo that was taken apart, turned inside out, and then a voice box from a Halloween toy that kind of went wah, 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 was stuck inside.
And there you've got evil Halloween Elmo.
Yes, yeah.
Well, and looking at some of the projects in your book, you've got, maybe this was part of the same project, inventing new animals. Is that, again, just recombining existing toys or found art or found materials, or what is that?
Yeah, a lot of, I think, just reconsidering toys and all that they can do. I think that might be Asia Ward stuff. She's actually a Minnesota artist. I lived in the Twin Cities for years, so I love Wisconsin.
All right. Anyway,
but Asia, she takes really old used toys and combines them, and hers look really incredible, and they take on completely different personalities. Yeah.
We're talking to Karen Wilkinson about her new book, The Art of Tinkering. She makes the case that we should work with our hands, do projects, and have fun with it. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're talking about crafting, do-it-yourself projects, and more with Karen Wilkinson. Her new book is called The Art of Tinkering.
And you can join the conversation. Are you a maker, a do-it-yourselfer, a craftsperson, or do you wish you were but need some advice or inspiration on how to get started? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or send a quick email to talk@wpr.org. We'll go right to our callers now. We've got Nathan on the line in New London. Nathan, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I just, I kind of enjoy tinkering, and I wanted to share a story about something I built probably when I was 16. It was an ice boat, so we have this frozen lake where I grew up. And so what I did is I took apart some ice skates for runners and then built this little frame for it. And rigged up a sail using some conduit as like sail.
Because the mast, kind of.
Yeah, a mast, exactly. And then you could really get rocketing along this frozen lake. And I had a little rudder out of an ice skate, and it was just a blast until I eventually bent the mast.
Until the inevitable happened. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nathan, that was when you were 16. Do you still do stuff like this?
Yeah, I'm actually starting my own farm, so a lot of that is just tinkering around with various stuff and trying to do with whatever materials I have on hand.
Nathan, thank you so much for sharing that. And Karen, he sounds like the ideal tinkerer. And I was going to say, another tenet he reminded me of, that ice boat sounded like it might be a little dangerous. Should tinkers be okay with a little element of danger?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's part of it. I mean, the lovely part for me was also taking skates apart and using those for the runners. But I think this element of excitement and risk, it's definitely part of it. Yeah.
And he's going to be a farmer. And that makes me think, I think when you talk about the maker movement and tinkering and that sort of thing, there's two cultures. There's these people who are doing this hip new thing. And then there's people like farmers or maybe earlier generations who are like, that's just what you do. that's what we've always done.
Yeah, I mean, tinkering out of necessity, that really, you know, talk about original makers. I grew up in a rural area, so yeah, absolutely, that kind of tinkering, you know, making do, exactly what Nathan said, with whatever you have on hand. But it's really an incredible thing in terms of, especially kids now are kind of detached more and more from the way things work. And I think being on a farm, you're confronted with that constantly when things don't work. You have to make them work again. And I think just getting back in touch with that, you know, if you're not exposed to that on a daily basis like you would be on a farm.
Nathan, thanks a lot for sharing that story. We've got Peter now on the line in Broadhead. Peter, hi.
Hi. So I was rural culture again. If you ever get a chance, go to a tractor pull, and if they'll let you into the pits, take a look around, and you will find all sorts of inventions, things that you've just never even seen before. They're, you know, where there's a need, they just build. Now, I've been a tinker, I guess you'd call it, you know, pretty much my whole life. I can remember being like 8 or 9 years old, and we had a flood. And a lot of people's basements flooded, and so they were putting all this stuff out to the curb. Well, I found a big old cabinet tube radio, and I pulled the radio portion out of the cabinet. And I've kind of sat down and figured out how to wire it up, and I got it wired up and got a speaker attached to it. And I had all the tubes were exposed, and luckily all the tubes worked. I let them everything dry out well. And so I had my own AM tube radio.
Nice.
And then I got really into nice. More electronics and.
All right, Peter, thanks a lot. So 8 or 9, he's fixing those tube radios. And tractor pulls is a source for inspiration. I don't know if you've I've never been in the pit at a tractor pull. Have you, Karen?
No, I haven't, but I can definitely imagine the inventiveness that takes place. You know, and the hipsters, as you call them now, you know, with Maker Faire, a thing to do is go to these power tool drag races. So, you know, I think it's all there in the way things work, whether it's tractors or anything else. I mean, figuring out how things work, reworking them, fixing them, that's really what it's all about.
Peter, thanks for the call. We've got Susan on the line now in Daggett, Michigan. Daggett, did I say that right, Susan?
Yes.
Okay.
Hello.
What, are you a tinkerer?
Oh, yes, I love to tinker. I inherited that from my dad. And I'm a rag rug weaver. I use clothing to make rugs, and then I try to make things out of the rugs, purses, log carriers, baby changing mats. I use ties. I try to use the pockets from the clothes. I try to use the buttons.
Okay, and now you make these things, Susan. Do you use them? Do you give them as gifts? What ends up happening to all these projects?
It's kind of turning into a business.
Oh.
I started about 30 years ago, and it's just grown by word of mouth mostly. I do a few art fairs. I'm in a few galleries. I do a lot of custom work. I have 10 looms. So, in fact, I just bought a new house so I could have a real nice workshop. So I'm getting serious.
Susan, thanks for the call. Karen, I bet there are a lot of spouses who have heard the line, something like, we need a new house or garage or something to make room for that workshop.
Yeah, I can absolutely identify with a new house for a loom. Yeah.
And you've got a section on textiles in your book.
Yeah, actually, there are a lot of fiber artists doing some pretty incredible things and working with kind of original techniques and putting a twist on them. One of my favorite examples of that is Emily Stone King. She took a technique for knitting that's used in making the toe of a sock, and kind of by playing with this, realized that she could sculpt three-dimensionally with yarn, and then has now actually turned this into a business. She lists her stuff on Etsy at a business called Anitomy instead of Anatomy, and she knits these amazing dissected looking animals. So a frog that's split open like you had in biology class. And she actually sells them on dissection trays, completely pinned open. But it's all knitted yarn.
And no offense to her, people buy these?
Oh my gosh. Well, maybe I can't be the only one. I have three.
All right. All right. Well, we've got another project on the line here. Barry is with us in La Crosse. Barry, hi.
How you doing?
Good.
Well, my wife did a great tinkering job recently. I play in a band, and we both are in the band, and the microphone stands at the end of the night when you're putting them away are kind of a hard to pack thing, you know, big metal microphone stands. So we were previously using like a bag like that a tent came in, and that eventually gave way and tore the bottom out. So then we had the idea to find an old golf bag, which we found at Goodwill. And she took the little thing out that keeps the golf clubs in the right place. She took that out of there, and now we have a golf bag with an arm carrier to use for our microphone stand.
Nice. Oh, we need that for my band. That's a great tip. Karen, how much of tinkering is looking for problems like that to solve?
Exactly, yeah. It's posing that problem, the mic stands that didn't work in the tent bag anymore. And I think the lovely thing is now they've got, not only is it a customized and very personal mic stand bag, I bet it's fabulous looking.
They're that band with a golf bag, man. Well, Karen, can you leave us with a project, a prescription for something we can try maybe even this weekend?
Oh, gosh, let's see, what to try. Well, I'm trying to think of something that anybody would have. Let's do cameras. Try looking at cameras from a really different perspective. Taking an image of some kind from a different vantage point. There are a few in the book. I'll give you one example, and it's going to be a far-out one, so I kind of hesitate, but I'm going to say it anyway. Justin Quinnell turned his mouth into a pinhole camera and put film inside his mouth, exposing it using the gap between his teeth, and you get on film this incredible look out his teeth, down to his feet. He's sitting in the bathtub, and you see the faucets and things, and you get this incredible perspective.
And I think all the old spies used to do exactly that. Karen, thank you so much. It's been a lot of fun.
Great. Thank you.
That was Karen Wilkinson. As I said earlier, she's a professional tinkerer at the Exploratorium in San Francisco. She's co-author of the new book, lots of craft projects, tinkering projects in the book. It's called The Art of Tinkering. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up, we'll get the latest on what's making news in Wisconsin, including a primary challenge to a Republican member of Congress.
Now, you are our guest. We got the news yesterday that David Letterman, longtime late-night host at two different networks, is retiring next year. The question now, who will take his place? What will take the place of his show? We want your suggestions. Who do you want to see pick up David Letterman's mantle? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. That's 800-642-1234. Or do you think it's time to give that late-night celebrity interview skits and all that format a rest? Want to hear your thoughts. Who should replace David Letterman? 800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. Veronica, we've seen a lot of names floated out there, seriously.
That's right.
And
the
otherwise.
Internet is a buzz. This is a big deal. Letterman has been on the air for a long time. He's a mainstay for a lot of people, sort of the gold standard of late night. And the question is, who will sit the Iron Throne of late night comedy?
And will it be a bloody succession? Oh, no, wait. Wrong
right.
show.
It has been. It has been acrimonious in the past. Look at what happened with Jay Leno and Conan O'Brien. Some people saying, go Stephen Colbert.
Mm-hmm. As CBS, according to some reports, is looking at Stephen Colbert as a top choice. Would he do it? Would they want him? What would the reaction be? Ellen DeGeneres, I've seen some people suggesting she take over the job. This one, I think, is a joke. Bring Jay Leno out of retirement to do it. Who would you like to see hosting a late night talk show? 800-642-1234. Would you like to see Stephen Colbert move up to that high profile slot?
1-800-642-1234 is the number to call. We want to hear from you. There are people who are pretty hopped up about this right now. People who are saying, you know what, it's time for a woman to be there in the lead chair of late night. Why not give it to a woman? There are people saying it's time to get a diverse voice in late night. And why not seize the moment? Well, what do you think? Or is late night you just kind of a tired format and you want to see reruns of Green Acres or
Matt
something?
Locke or MacGyver, maybe.
Matlock.
Well, I remember watching David Letterman early on. It was a fresh, new, different thing. They had elevator races and, you know, dropped fruit, watermelons and pumpkins off of rooftops and things like that. That was one of the first things I remember seeing.
Wait, on what?
On Letterman, when they first started, they just did crazy stuff, I think because they had nothing better to do. Sounds familiar. 800-642-1234 is the
number to call. The management would like to point out that was not a reference to Central Time.
Some other names that have been thrown out before we get to your calls. Neil Patrick Harris just wrapped up on How I Met Your Mother. Craig Ferguson, a later night host. Lots of names floating around out there. We'll go to your calls now at 800-642-1234. Keith is going to start us off in Milwaukee. Hey there, Keith. Keith, are you there?
Keith sounds like a distant robot. Maybe you could call back, Keith, and we'll see if we can get you a little bit more clearly. And how about we move to Karen, who's joining us from Beaver Dam. Hi, Karen.
Hi.
What do you think? Who should be the next Letterman?
I don't know if he'd be that good for the variety show part, but I would love to listen to Lewis Black do his political commentary.
So go politics, go Lewis Black.
That would be a very...
I mean, it might wear him out, but...
Yeah, that would be a very different show, that kind of angry, polemical, political comedy.
I don't know if he could do it every night, but it'd be great to hear him.
All right. Thanks a lot for the suggestion, Karen. Marsha on Facebook writes... I should. She's throwing her hat in the ring. I'm very funny. I love to talk, she writes, and I need a good paying job. Marsha, you've got my vote. Good luck to you.
Excellent. And how about we'll go to Keith next from Green Bay. Hi, Keith.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm okay. How about you?
Good. Well, I tell you what, the David Letterman was definitely a heck of a lot better when he was dropping stuff off a building.
Yeah, I do miss some of the wackier stuff.
Yeah,
Keith is
absolutely.
Not a fan. So you're ready for this to happen. You're ready for Letterman to move on.
Absolutely. It's time for him to retire. Move on to the new.
All right. So who do you want to take his place?
The comedian Bill Burr.
I'm not familiar with him. What kind of stuff does he
do? Familiar with Bill Burr? Oh, you got to check him out. Google Bill Burr. He is absolutely, he's spot on. He's honest. You know, I have to learn to swear a little bit less, but I think he would make a fantastic, tell you what, it wouldn't be boring.
All right. Well, if I can make the transition from not swearing to being on the air, he can too. Keith, thanks a lot for the suggestion. We are looking for your suggestions for who should replace David Letterman as a late night talk show host. Letterman announced yesterday he's out next year.
And let's go next to Dave. Dave joins us now from Wanakee. Hi, Dave.
Hi. Zach Galifianakis doing Between Two Ferns interviewing is the best, the funniest thing I have heard in 10 years.
He's a funny Nobody guy, but better. Would it get old, Dave? He's kind of always a Zach Galifianakis.
He wouldn't do just that. He would do a variety of things. He isn't a one-trick pony. He is a genuinely hilarious person.
All right. Zach Galifianakis.
Thanks.
You go.
Thanks for the vote, Dave. We'll go now to Diane with us in Toma. Hi there, Diane.
Hello. So I'm thinking Keith Olbermann would be funny. John Stewart would be a lovely thing. Perhaps Stephen Colbert. Rachel Maddow. I think she could really do a good job. Or Ellen DeGeneres.
Okay, a lot of suggestions. A few of those names are floating around out there. Diane, thanks a lot for calling in with your suggestions on who can replace David Letterman. Lines opening up now at 800-642-1234.
Is Rachel Maddow funny?
I don't know. I mean, I think of her
as politics.
Political stuff more, yeah. I don't know
right,
how
well,
she'd do with celebrity.
Career transition there for her, maybe. Okay, how about we go next to Chad in Dubuque, Iowa. Hi, Chad.
Hi, how are we doing?
Pretty good. What do you think?
Well, you know, my suggestion would be David Duchovny, I just love. I don't think it's probably a real option. I can't imagine him doing it, but I would love to see him on the air doing something like that.
Chad, is it?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Is it because he's dreamy?
Is it because what?
He's dreamy. He's a dreamboat. David Duchovny. No?
Well, I don't know. I guess I don't see him that way. I find him hilarious. I guess I have a little man crush on him. But,
well, that's the thing. He is funnier than you might think just from maybe X-Files and some other things. He had a good role in Twin Peaks.
He's actually very intelligent. He actually has a master's in literature from Yale University as well.
All right.
All right. A vote for David Duchovny for
a late night
host.
A dark horse vote for David Duchovny. I like it. How about we go next to Mary in Janesville? Hi, Mary.
Hi.
What's your vote?
I'd like to see Tina Fey.
Oh, I'm liking that.
That's what I've seen people suggest that. What's your case for Tina Fey?
Well, she's hilarious. She's very contemporary. She's, you know, very popular, so she'd have a huge following, and she's a woman.
Yeah.
All right.
Amen to that. That's a cool idea. Send another woman on the radio. All right. Well, thank you, Mary. I appreciate that thought. And let's go next to Pete in Oconto. Hi, Pete.
Hello.
Hi.
I would suggest that Peter Sagal from Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me would be a great host.
He's funny. He's got the public radio pedigree. The worry I would have is then you'd see this mass migration. Once that happened, TV would just be raiding public radio for host after host after host. There'd be a talent shortage here.
That would be terrible.
Yeah, you guys would probably be looking for more money. So.
People would see what I look like then, though. I'm not going there. Pete, thanks a lot. Pete, I could see that. Peter Sagal's
you
a lot of fun.
You just interviewed Peter Sagal.
I did. It was lively.
He was funny.
Yeah. And we got along pretty well. Maybe he'd have me on his show.
Maybe.
I could be the sidekick.
No.
No. Okay. Forget it. Forget I said it.
Putting the kibosh on that. All right. Let's go next to Kurt in Suamico. Hi, Kurt.
Hi. Yeah, I think that the best person for the job would be me. I would give it my all for a week and then retire in style.
Okay. A write-in campaign for yourself. I like it.
Yeah.
You'd have to ask for some big money up front there.
Yes. Yes.
All right. Who would be your dream interview? Who would you have to have on during that week, Kurt?
Ooh. Well, if it was my dream, it would be Jack Benny.
Okay, but
or
how about
Groucho?
Oh, okay. So it would be Kurt's time traveling talk show. I love it.
Yeah,
that really opens up the guest options.
Kurt, do you have a joke you want to audition with right here on the air? A clean
your opening monologue.
Your opening monologue.
I'd have to tell you off the air.
Okay.
All right, that doesn't bode well. But good luck anyway, Kurt.
Okay, thanks.
All right, and we have one on a comment on Facebook. Kara on Facebook writes, Wayne Brady. She says she's totally ready for Letterman to retire. Wayne Brady was fun on Whose Line Is It Anyway? Uh, I, I always enjoyed him. He had a variety show for a while.
The tall, skinny guy?
No, no. He's the one who was sang on Whose Line. He did a lot of the singing routine. So Wayne Brady, I think that's that name that might be out there. Well, thanks, Kara, and thanks to all of you for your calls and your suggestions for replacements for David Letterman. Maybe you can tweet us if you haven't gotten on the air at Central Time WPR.
I was thinking that it was going to be hard to fill. Now, tons of names out
there. Tons of names, yeah. The CBS has no trouble. They'll get away cheap because there's so many options out there. Right now, it's time for our weekly check-in with our regular news guy, Noah Ovshinsky. He joins us each Friday at this time to catch us up on what's making headlines in Wisconsin. Hey, Noah.
Hey, guys. Good to be with you tonight.
Well, our legislature ended its session, evidently for real, maybe, to be continued this time. What happened in the closing days?
It's true. The rumors are true. The legislative session officially ended this week with the Senate finishing up its business for the year. And now we're actually officially into election season.
Uh-huh. Okay. So we've turned a
corner. Amazing how quickly that happens. Yeah. Before we get to election season, let's talk about the legislative session. The Senate passed, and the governor has since signed a much talked about bill that makes chemotherapy drugs in pill form more affordable. This is similar to a bill that the Senate originally passed a while ago, although the Assembly added an amendment to that original bill that adds a $100 per month cap on copays. That's why the Senate had to re-vote on that piece of legislation, because they had not initially supported this cap. Now they have, and that piece of legislation is now the rule, is now the law in Wisconsin.
All right, well, that one passed. Another one that you've been tracking, Noah, is the doctor's apology issue. Where's that?
Right. So the Senate also passed a bill that is a bill in one form or another that has been floating around for a while now. And this is a bill that prohibits a doctor's apology from being used as evidence in a medical malpractice lawsuit, which happens quite often. In fact, it's one of the key piece of evidence that lawyers use to prove or attempt to prove a malpractice in these lawsuits. Supporters of this bill that prohibits the use of apologies in lawsuits, they say this will improve the communication between doctors and patients' families. And there's also some evidence that suggests that apologies by doctors and other healthcare professionals actually may even lessen the chance of a doctor or hospital being sued in the first place.
Now, if you are someone who is bringing a malpractice suit, what does this news mean to you then?
It's not good news. Also, if you're a trial lawyer who specializes in medical malpractice, this is, you know, one less tool in the tool belt, so to speak. Critics of this bill say it makes it much harder for people to win medical malpractice suits in this state.
Now, it's happened in years past that we've talked about, okay, now we're done with the session, and then it comes back somehow. Is that going to happen this year?
Right. So there's this possibility, and it really is nothing more than a possibility, that the legislature may come back in a special session to make changes to the state's voter ID law. And the reason why I say that is because there are several cases now going on both in state and federal court that have to do with a voter ID law. And if those rulings come down between now and, say, election time, mm-hmm. towards November, if those rulings come down, lawmakers have suggested that they are willing to come back in special session to address whatever changes the judges think need to happen in order to make it lawful in the state, because they want to make sure that voter ID is in place for the next election.
So we'll be watching for a sequel.
Yeah.
May or may not come there.
Yeah, stay tuned.
Well, there was something else happening this week, another big story. Republican State Senator Glenn Grothman had a busy week. He's taking on one of his own.
Right. So Glenn Grothman announced this week that he plans to mount a primary challenge against Congressman Tom Petri, who represents the 6th Congressional District, which is sort of the Fond du Lac area of Wisconsin. Grothman says basically that Petri, although he likes him personally, he says Petri is too moderate and that he hasn't done enough to attack what Grothman says is an over-dependence on government. And what Grothman has said is people need to be more outspoken. The Republican Party needs to be more outspoken about what he sees as excessive spending by the federal government.
And what is the incumbent saying in response to the challenge here?
So Petri defended his record after the announcement, saying, this is a direct quote, saying his record of pragmatic conservatism will speak for itself.
And Glenn Grothman is no stranger to internal challenges. He got into his current seat, right, challenging a prominent Wisconsin state senator from his own party.
Right. So he won his seat that he is now in a primary challenge against former Senate Majority Leader Mary Panzer. That was in 2004. So, Rob, as you noted, this is not the first time Glenn Grothman has been involved in a primary challenge.
And we'll move now to another area of the legislation. Bill Cramer, who has been in the headlines and not for reasons that are very happy for him, and how that plays out ultimately still up in the air right now. What's going on there?
Right. So Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, as well as others in the GOP leadership, sent a letter this week to Bill Cramer demanding that he resign his seat. Cramer, as a matter of background here, Cramer has been charged with felonies by prosecutors in Waukesha County related to an alleged sexual assault that took place a few years ago. He is accused of touching a then legislative staffer inappropriately at an event in Muskego. And those felonies, those charges were just filed very recently.
And what's the case that his own party's leaders are making for why he should get out now?
Right. So the letter said that this alleged behavior, and of course it is alleged at this point, they call it reprehensible, and that he should leave out of respect for the institution of state government and the people he represents in his particular district.
So that aspect sort of appeals to his better self, but there was also a stick that went along with this. Tell us about that part.
Right. So there was also, in addition to that letter that was sent to him, there was also an accompanying press release where GOP leaders indicated that those in Cramer's district could recall him if he doesn't resign. Basically, they indicated that was an option for his district.
There was some talk of the legislature voting to expel him. Where did that go?
Right. So lawmakers do have the option to return to the Capitol to potentially vote to expel him from the legislature. But it seems like at this point, you know, they aren't willing to do that. Instead, obviously relying or putting the onus on Cramer's district to make that decision. According to Robin Voss, you know, they don't want to interfere with the criminal case that is ongoing. And they feel that, expelling him and the legislature may complicate that criminal case.
And where is the Cramer's legal team on this right now? What do we know about what they're saying?
Right. So according to Cramer's lawyer, he says he has no plans to step down at this point.
So he's in the Assembly, which means his seat is up for election this mm-hmm. November. He said he's not running again, right?
Right.
So if he's not expelled, if he's not recalled, if he doesn't step down, he's done whenever the rest of the Assembly is inaugurated next January or whenever that is.
Right. So because he has said he's not planning to seek reelection. So whatever happens, whether something happens in the criminal case or whether he is recalled or changes his mind for that matter. I mean, he could change his mind and say, yes, I will resign. His time at the Capitol is limited because, as you mentioned, he's not running for reelection and that term ends at the end of this year. So regardless of what happens, he won't be in the Capitol next year.
And we move from the state capitol to Eau Claire, where there were two key referenda voted on recently. What happened?
Yeah, so this is really a story that has been actually made headlines in Eau Claire and has been debated really extensively in that community for months and really almost close to 2 years now. There have been a debate over a proposed performing arts center and student housing project downtown. And supporters of this project hope that this $80 million project will serve as sort of a catalyst for economic development in the downtown area of Eau Claire.
What was the debate like over this? This was a referendum, right? Or two referenda, I should say.
Right. So on Tuesday, residents in the county voted in favor of contributing $3.5 million towards the Performing Arts Center. So that was one question. You know, should the county contribute money to this project? And voters, that question passed with around 54% of the vote. So voters said, yes, we're willing to spend money on this project. You know, critics argue that this wouldn't be a good use of taxpayer money and that it was basically redundant because there were other performing arts spaces in Eau Claire, you know, high school auditoriums and such. And they frankly argue that it's not the city's job to help fund this kind of arts project. You know, they say private developers should be the ones taking the lead on this kind of project. The other question that the voters had on the ballot was they were asked in the city of Eau Claire whether or not future referendums should be necessary for arts-related projects costing more than $1 million. So basically, it's a referendum that potentially could put up further obstacles to start projects like this proposed $80 million arts project. And that was voted down 60% to 40%. So both of these referenda are really, I think, a statement for the community, at least, that this is something that at least the majority of residents support. It has its critics, but this is something that the community wants for Eau Claire.
Seems to be a statement of support of the arts in general.
Yeah, that too. Absolutely. I mean, that is a crucial part. There is student housing associated with this project, but really the Performing Arts Center is one of those things that people have talked a lot about. And the supporters of this project think that this has the potential to really bring people downtown, to make the downtown a destination for theater and dance and that sort of thing. So for now, the project is moving forward with a big stamp of approval from the county and the city of Eau Claire.
So we'll keep an eye on that as it develops. You mentioned earlier we made a very quick transition from the legislative session to election season. We'll have the WPR St. Norbert survey results on, among other things, the race for governor next week. What happens now? They're not legislating. Do you see candidates getting out, hitting the streets, meeting constituents, drumming up support?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first thing we'll see is people announcing what their intentions are. Of course, there are people that are announcing that they're not going to run for re-election. Mm-hmm. So, in the next few months, we'll get a sense of, what the playing field is actually going to look like, who's leaving, who's staying, who's going to run again for their seat. So that'll happen. And then, we'll hear them both, at press conferences around the state and events, live events, but also advertising. Of course, with the governor's race, you can bet that going into this summer, there is going to be advertising on both sides. Partly because the governor wants to get his message across and because Mary Burke needs to do more to introduce herself to the state as a whole.
Now, Noah, as you've been talking, I have one final question. It's been snowing over your shoulder on and off out the window. Are the people of Wisconsin in support of more snow?
No.
I was hoping
you heard it here first.
This Wisconsin isn't.
Noah, thanks for joining us. That's Noah Ovshinsky, WPR's assistant news director.